We've had disasters very close to home in the past year. The car fire was right here where we live, and the campfire was not far away. But even distant disasters seen in the media can scare and otherwise trouble children. And researchers at the University of Missouri have a pile of ideas on how to help children make sense of what they're seeing, or at least be less frightened by it. This is not just for parents, but also for teachers who spend many hours each day with children. Brian Houston is the director of the Disaster and Community Crisis Center, or DCC, at the University of Missouri. Brian, thanks for joining us today.
Thanks for having me this morning.
I am fascinated by the very existence of the DCC. When did it start, and what's the mission?
I've been working in the area of disaster media coverage and disaster mental health for 15 years or so, but we established the center here at the University of Missouri in about 2010, and we're really focused on understanding the mental and behavioral health impacts of disasters on children, families, communities. And so we think a lot about some of the issues you mentioned in terms of media coverage of disasters, exposure to disasters, and also then how we can, as parents, teachers, other people in the community, talk about disasters, think about them in ways that can be helpful and hopefully foster more resilience to these events that are, you know, never going to go away.
This is a University of Missouri, a school with the well-known journalism program, which I graduated from, by the way.
Oh, excellent.
So MIZ.
You're right. ZOU.
There you go. So how closely has the journalism school worked with you on things like figuring out disaster coverage in the media?
Quite closely. I'm in the communication department, but I have an appointment with the School of Journalism and work very closely with a lot of the faculty there. The School of Journalism here at the University of Missouri has a Reynolds Journalism Institute that funds and invests a lot of research and investigation into best practices for journalism. And so as part of that work, I've collaborated with several people on different aspects of disaster media coverage, what it is, you know, what we see it being when events occur, and maybe ideas about what we think it should be. And so there's actually faculty over at the journalism school that teach classes on helping student journalists who are training to be professional journalists cover traumatic events that affect families and communities. And of course, one of the big potentially traumatic events that they might be covering are large-scale community disasters. And so our journalism school is active in helping the next generation of journalists continue to get better at how we cover these events.
I'll come back to the journalists in a minute, but the stuff that you put out there at the DCC, the Disaster and Community Crisis Center, is fascinating, including the whole big packet on disaster media intervention, or DMI. I mean, how big an issue can it be for young people to see disasters, even if they're thousands of miles away, but see them on TV, on the internet, wherever?
Yeah, it can be actually, you know, a significant deal, and kind of surprisingly so. I think, you know, we might assume as parents or teachers that, you know, if a disaster is happening on the air side of the country, that our kids or children in the community maybe aren't really thinking about it, maybe aren't really affected by it. But the research shows otherwise, and it shows that, particularly, you know, a lot of this research got started after the Oklahoma City bombing, terrorist bombing in the early 1990s, and really took off after the September 11th terrorist attacks. And, you know, we saw that children from across the country were having reactions to media coverage of these events. And in fact, children across the world, I mean, there were studies in London, there was a research study in India where, you know, even, you know, non-American children were seeing media coverage of these events and were having some reactions in terms of worry, anxiety, being concerned, fear for, you know, their own personal safety. This pattern is not slowing down as our media have evolved, and now, you know, kids are even more connected to media through social media, through the internet, and are potentially more connected to even more graphic depictions of what's going on than we might have seen, you know, 20 or 30 years ago on broadcast television. So it doesn't. This phenomenon doesn't seem to be slowing down. It may be increasing as our technology gets more sophisticated and connected and advanced.
Well, true. I guess where 30 years ago, a parent could have said, don't turn on the TV, knowing what was on it at the time. It's a lot harder now to block a kid off from knowing stuff going on in the world. So, but this is something that you point out in the recent research, that it's not just something parents should talk to kids about, but teachers too.
Yeah, teachers really have an opportunity, because of the time that they spend with children, clearly, to help in these situations. And, what has been found in the research is that, kids are exposed to media coverage of these events, even if we don't realize it may be as parents or teachers or adults. It can be on their mind, and they want to talk about it. And unfortunately, what happens is, in a lot of these events, we as adults, if we're parents or teachers or whatnot, don't really want to bring it up because we worry that we might worry kids by bringing it up and by talking about it and by addressing it. But what we find is that, when children observe that adults don't want to talk about something, that's a signal that something is really bad often, right? So, if adults don't want to talk about it, it must be really bad. And so we're trying to not upset children, but we're kind of sending a cue that this is too bad to even talk about. And so we sort of see teachers as being that, trusted adult that children, students know well, that they're used to talking with in terms of understanding the world and learning. And so teachers are really in a nice position to have some of these discussions with kids about events like disasters that are in the media that can be really helpful. And students want that and often need that.
Media coverage of disasters and the effect on children is the topic here on the Jefferson Exchange as we talk to Brian Houston, the director of the Disaster and Community Crisis Center, DCC, at the University of Missouri at Columbia. You can join the conversation on the Exchange, 800-838-3760 by phone. If you have stories to tell us about ways you approach discussing disasters and tragedies with your kids, please share them with us. 800-838-3760 by phone, by email, jx@jeffnet.org. Any specifics on size of optimal size of group, Brian? Is it better to have a whole class talk about this or break into smaller groups or anything like that?
Yeah, I think, depending on kind of the severity of the event, maybe smaller groups would be better for something that's more intense, closer to home. But I think generally, classroom discussions can be good. And what teachers may be trying to accomplish in these discussions is kind of get a sense what children are thinking about in terms of the event, what they know, what they think happened. And so a lot of the discussion there can be, the teacher helping to maybe clarify some misconceptions about what's going on. That can often, be very helpful in terms of children may have heard something, may have seen something on the internet that may or may not exactly be true. And so teachers kind of clarifying what exactly happened can help. For example, after the September 11th terrorist attacks, there were reports of, because the media and the television coverage of those events clearly showed, the plane hitting the building over and over all day, and the towers collapsing over and over all day. And of course, that event was terrible enough. But what we saw was that many children thought that those replays were actually additional buildings falling down, right? So, imagine how much worse of an event that was in their minds, children's minds, if they're interpreting these replays as being, a new building falling down every time. So, clarifying basic misconceptions like that can help a lot and is a role for that teachers can serve in the classroom, reassuring children that they're safe, right? What are adults in this community doing to protect children, to make sure we're safe, to provide a safe environment for students? Because, all of us, when we see these events on TV, we often think, could this happen to us? Could this happen in our community? And so, providing some reassurances there that the community is prepared, that things are going on, can be helpful. And so, you know, those sorts of processes can be done probably in a whole classroom. And then, you know, if a particular student is having, you know, difficulties beyond that are maybe more severe than other students, then that's a great time for teachers to connect that student with the school counselor or the school nurse or other resources in the community so that the student can maybe get a little additional help if they need it.
I noticed you divide the disaster media effects on students into age groups, preschoolers, elementary school age, 5 to 11, and then older students, 12 to 18. I mean, obviously the preschoolers are the ones who are going to struggle the most to understand this, but have there been some surprises in the ways in which kids manifest their concerns just in that elementary school age group as well?
Yeah, I mean, there's definitely, you mentioned the developmental continuum from very young children to older children and adolescents, and some of the differences. You know, a lot of it has to do with, age and ability to process media. So, you know, my example that I gave a minute ago about children not understanding that replays aren't an actual thing happening. I mean, that's very much a developmental piece that, you know, adolescents probably aren't going to make that mistake, but younger children are. And so, you know, the nice thing about teachers is they're ingrained and sort of situated in that development continuum and know where their students are at. So are often pretty well equipped to get a sense of what the concerns might be. But we see effects across the continuum in terms of children's age. And generally, the younger a child, when children are younger compared to when they're a little bit older, the more exposure they have to this disaster media coverage, the more severe their reactions are. So it is the younger children that probably, you know, don't have as many of the tools to kind of make sense of the situation and understand that when they're exposed to this media coverage, tend to have the tougher time. And that's not necessarily a surprising finding, but it confirms that, you know, we need to be paying attention to children at all ages. And again, particularly in this new media environment where, you know, a young child may have an iPad for a game or whatnot, and may then, as a result, you know, accidentally get connected to media of coverage, something that a parent or teacher may not be thinking about. So we kind of need to be on our toes.
I was going to say, the teachers really need to have their ears up, it sounds like, to be aware of what the kids are talking about, to know if something has reached the threshold where they do need to talk about it as a class.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think, you know, some basic prompts of, you know, is there something going on that people want to talk about? Is there something in the news that you all want to talk about? So providing that kind of open entree to let kids suggest what their is on their minds is a possibility in terms of what teachers can do. But often, you know, kids will do this themselves. I mean, I remember after the Newtown school shooting, my daughter coming down and saying, "Hey, Dad, did you hear anything about something that was really bad that happened on the news today?" I mean, she was kind of doing that same thing to me to prompt me to sort of talk to her about what was going on. And so, you know, I, of course, wanted to say no. You know, I mean, that's a difficult conversation to have, but she's prompting me to have that conversation with her. So, you know, and she had seen it on, she had an old laptop of mine that she was using for work or for homework, and the homepage was sent to the New York Times. And so she just happened, you know, she doesn't read the New York Times, but she happened to be exposed to it, was, you know, instantly brought right in. And so she was providing that entree to have the discussion. And that may happen quite often in the classroom with teachers, and I think teachers need to, you know, they're busy, they have a lot going on, but realize that this is taking time to talk about this can help clarify some misconceptions and work through some of these issues that will, in the longer term, probably make the school day better because we've had a chance to talk about it with students and hopefully help them feel a little bit better.
Children and the media coverage of disasters, the topic here on the Jefferson Exchange with Brian Houston, the director of the Disaster and Community Crisis Center at the University of Missouri. Brian, how honest should parents and or teachers be about their own emotional reactions to disasters? Does sharing help the kids, or is that not a good thing?
Yeah, I mean, we definitely encourage teachers to you know, take a deep breath because you're right. A lot of these events are distressing for adults too. And we can often have emotional reactions to these events and are confused and worried. And so it's not as if these reactions are just happening in children and adults are just there to say everything's going to be okay. A lot of times we may be worried, are things going to be okay, and have real concerns. And so we do recommend that, you know, teachers and adults try to, you know, maintain some composure, get some composure, take some deep breaths, maybe take some time before they start talking to children about these events, so that we're a bit more composed than we might want to be, right? But I do think acknowledging, you know, particularly as children get older, you know, acknowledging some uncertainty, acknowledging, you know, children will often, and we all will, right, will often want to know why. Why did this happen? Why did this person do this thing? Why did this occur? Why did those people get hurt? And, you know, acknowledging that we as adults don't know and don't have answers and aren't sure is an okay thing to do. We may want to say, we want to explain and say why everything's going to be okay, but acknowledging some of that uncertainty is okay. And so, you know, getting some composure, taking some deep breaths, acknowledging some uncertainty. You know, we don't encourage parents or teachers to tell children everything that happened, right? I mean, you want to have kind of a detail appropriate discussion. There are lots of things you don't want to, necessarily add in terms of details to the event if the kids aren't asking about it. So, you know, use some of that kind of parental and teacher good judgment. But again, you know, any of these discussions are likely to help because the children will at least understand that it's okay to talk about this, and I can talk about this, and I can ask these questions. And that alone, we probably experience this in our own lives, can be quite helpful in and of itself.
So I see the three primary goals of disaster media intervention are encourage dialogue, establish a sense of safety, and develop coping skills. We were just talking about some of these. I want to come back to the journalist question here, though, because as we pointed out, there's a strong connection to the journalism school at the University of Missouri. I can't imagine you were hearing a lot back from people in the business that they can change what they do. I mean, things like this have to be covered.
Absolutely. And you know, we want them to be covered, right? I mean, if something happens in my community or, here in this country or across the world, we as citizens, we as individuals want to know what's happening. We want to know, we want those updates. I mean, journalists wouldn't be covering these things if we as consumers, as citizens, didn't want that information. And of course, there's a very helpful and adaptive utility of having journalists telling us what is happening and these sorts of things. And so, but, you know, a lot of our media coverage of disasters is an event happens, journalists arrive on the scene, cover the kind of acute events, you know, the rescue, the emergency, are there for a few days, and then, you know, at least for national journalists or journalists from that were sent from elsewhere, then they sort of leave. And what we sort of talk about a lot in terms of journalists' role in media coverage is, you know, there's a much longer time span of disasters and these sorts of events than just the events. And so we encourage journalists to think about covering preparedness for disasters and what are the disaster risks in the community and what is long-term recovery look like and what are the challenges and what is resilience and what does resilience look like in our community. So telling a longer story and a more kind of in-depth story, at least at the local level, is kind of how we encourage journalists to maybe do things that aren't always done otherwise.
All right. Brian Houston, Director of the Disaster and Community Crisis Center at the University of Missouri. Thanks for talking to us about kids and media.